You're listening to Engage with Andy Bush. To connect with the program today, please send an email to andrew.bush@comcast.net. That's andrew.bush@comcast.net. Now, back to this week's program.
Welcome back to Engage with Andy Bush. We now turn to one of the biggest stories in the financial markets, the resurgent U.S. dollar. Joining me today from London is ADM's currency genius, and I mean that, ladies and gentlemen, Eddie Topic. Eddie, welcome back to Engage.
Thank you very much indeed. I don't think I'd be called a genius or anything like that. I'm just a guy trying to get through the day with the least amount of damage to the people around me, but thank you very much anyway.
Well, you're welcome. I think that's what we all try to do, but I think you're really good at it when it comes to currencies. So let's talk about this. Obviously, you know, after the midterm elections, the U.S. dollar has rallied broadly against most major currencies. Why do you think the FX markets have reacted so positively?
I think the currency that reacted the most positive overnight was partially due to the time zones, which was the Japanese yen. The dollar has been going up against the Japanese yen anyway because of the stimulus packages that the Japanese have started to run. But it really kicked in there because obviously the time zone, it was the most liquid currency, possibly the euro as well, but the dollar yen was really in there, and it just pushed it higher on the back of it. The reason Republicans are seen being good for business, and that's, you have a situation where you've got two of the major parts that run the country, which is the Senate and the House.
And the House, right.
In the hands of the Republicans, it's seen as positive, though there has been some contra-talk because you have still the presidency in the Democratic hands and whether anything actually will come about because of it.
Well, I think one of the interesting stories, too, and you tell me, in, as far as the currencies go, and this is a major story when it comes to energy, but is it the likelihood that the U.S. will allow oil to be exported from the U.S. to other countries? Is that a big story for the markets as far as the currencies go?
Not at all, I'm afraid. This is probably much bigger story for the oil market itself. The situation there is it's a minor, if anything, story for anybody in there. I mean, the Canadian dollar will benefit probably, and the Aussie dollar would benefit from that, or get hit by it, depending which way around it goes, but not the U.S. dollar.
Interesting. All right, well, let's talk about the biggest story in the currency markets over the last week, and that really, of course, is what you alluded to before when you talked about the Japanese yen and the U.S. dollar rallying against the Japanese yen. We had not only the Bank of Japan announce that they were increasing their quantitative easing, but we also had the GPIF, or the Government Pension Investment Fund, announce that they were dramatically increasing their exposure to foreign bonds and stocks. Which one of these do you think is more important for the FX markets?
I think both of them were, because the timing was slightly off from both of them. The first one came out was the actual QE that came out from the Bank of Japan. But then later on, we saw that the GPIF was actually not only going to be investing into foreign bonds, but into foreign equities. And
right.
It was also increasing its percentage of Japanese equities that it was going to buy. So that the Nikkei was bouncing up on that, and that had spurred foreign investment into the Japanese market as well.
So we saw a shift in the currencies, though. I mean, Eddie, that was one of the biggest, like, two- or three-day moves that I've seen in the dollar against the yen. I mean, I can't remember when, right?
Yeah, it gapped over the weekend period as well. So, yeah, it's a really major move. And it shows that Abe's three arrows policy is actually starting to work. And he's very, very serious about it. He wants to get Japan out of deflation. And he's not going to hold off and use all the tools available for him to allow that, including spurning deliberate inflationary growth in the market.
Yeah, and that's a great point, to talking about Abe and the three arrows. So he's got, initially we had the spending by the government in Japan to stimulate the economy. Then we had the Bank of Japan act with quantitative easing to provide a lot of monetary stimulus. But Eddie, certainly one of the areas that was disappointing in is the change in the government reform policies that are out there. They just don't seem like they're happening at this point.
Well, I don't think anything can happen all at the same time. I mean, he's got three things he's really working on pretty hard. I've got a lot of time for him. He's actually trying to get the thing done. So you can't get everything done at the same time. And, you know, this thing's been running for 25 years in one direction. Trying to turn this super tanker around is going to take a little bit of time. And if he's managed two out of three at this stage in the cycle, and with the results that have come from it, then I think he's doing pretty well.
Yeah, it's fascinating. I mean, currencies go crazy, and they always over-adjust, right? And you and I have been in the currency markets for a long period of time, and we had the initial move back when Abe came into power, right, when he first announced what his program was, even before he got elected. Then we had the significant move in the weakness in the yen. It came up to around these levels. I forget what was, you know, what some was high, like 112, and then it went down to like 104, kind of stayed there for a while. Now we're going back the other way. Where do you think this thing ends up? You know, how much further on the upside do you think they're going to push this?
Well, it's interesting. The rally that I saw was up to about 110. Then it came back to, say, 104, 105 area. Mm-hmm. And now we're trading just short of 115. To be honest, okay. you've got some resistance back from the last decade between 115 and 118, but it would not surprise me for it to have a go at 118. And
wow.
There's some commentators, as soon as you get to 118, everybody's going to say, let's go for 120. But 118, just around there, would be enough for this move at this stage.
Interesting. Okay, so that's what your target is on the upside for this thing. You know, it does beg the question, when you have one currency that weakens so dramatically, there's repercussions across the foreign exchange pond. Obviously, this is probably going to cause some major problems for other countries. Like, I mean, South Korea comes to mind right away, of countries that are going to compete against Japanese companies.
Yeah, and also China. They've just announced the PMI numbers for HSBC were out overnight, and they've weakened yet again. So you've got a competition situation on some of their basic elements that they're producing and manufacture good between the Chinese and the Japanese, and obviously the Koreans as well. The rest of them have to readjust their numbers. They're going to actually have to see a weaker currency in their own respect. Otherwise, they will have a currency war going on between Korea, maybe Vietnam to a certain degree, the Philippines to a certain degree, Indonesia to a certain degree, but definitely between Korea, Japan, and China, I think you'd have to say in there as well.
So maybe we start to see the Chinese authorities begin to push the renminbi, you know, the U.S. dollar higher against the renminbi, just to keep up with what's going on in Japan.
I think that would come naturally to them to a certain degree. I think that would come naturally to them. They'd have to do that. I mean, there will be movements from the U.S. I mean, I think it's next week we've got G20, and I think, or the week after we've got G20, but I think President Obama is meeting with the Chinese premier next week, and I think that's definitely going to be on the table for discussion.
Yeah, that's a great point. What are your clients telling you about their expectations for the U.S. dollar strength against the yen and how the Far East plays out? Because Eddie's really plugged into the currency markets. He talks with some of the biggest funds out there, and how they move their money is really important for values in the currency markets.
My personal view is that the way they're talking is that they're going to be looking for a stronger dollar, and it's not going to happen just for the next week or so. We could be running into the end of the year with this, and possibly even to the first quarter of next year.
Wow. So an extended period of time, as the Federal Reserve would say.
If you look at the yen for as an example, I mean, we've had an extended period of a complete inactivity for nearly a year and a half, and then in August we suddenly start taking off.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's about time something happened.
Yeah, good point. Well, let's switch gears a little bit over to Europe, where you reside to some extent, although I'm not sure you would admit it being in London.
European.
I'm
happy
kidding.
To be European, but
maybe not happy to contribute.
Limits.
Yeah, within limits, right? Maybe not happy to contribute that nut that they want you to, right, back to the European
Union. If the waiter sends you a bill that's overvalued, you can send it back and say, go and work it out again.
Yeah. And I know you and I have done that a few times.
Yes.
All right, well, let's talk about what's going on there in the sense that the central bank, obviously the ECB, announced a, you know, quantitative easing program. Do you think do you think the part of the strategy for the ECB is not only to stimulate via QE, but also to have the euro decline against the U.S. dollar?
I don't think that's necessarily on the table at the moment. I think the next thing is actually this coming Thursday, when the individual central bank governors will be in probably a closed meeting with ECB's Draghi and his coterie, because there's been a massive falling out between the ECB and the individual central bank governors over what they're doing and what the policy is and how the communication is being done. And I think part of that is the result, what we've seen in the movement down in the euro, that the ECB is not necessarily following through with what it's supposed to do. It's finding a situation where one side of it, you're seeing the German block as such, saying they want to keep a strong euro because they want to keep their economy going well. Not too strong, but a strong euro. And then others who are looking, saying, listen, in the southern European part, we need a weaker euro, because otherwise we're just going to get hit all the time. We're always going to get hit.
Right. Well, one of the things that obviously has been floated around, and maybe this is part of the discussion that's going to occur, the internal debate within the ECB, is the discussion about what they're going to buy as far as quantitative easing, because they talked about covered bonds, and they also talked about bank loans, but those are not the size of those markets are not big enough to really have the impact that the central bank wants. So the discussion, you know, that's been floating around, and maybe it was a trial balloon, has been along the lines of the ECB buying corporate debt. What do you think about that strategy?
I'm open to it. I'd wait and see what's actually being said, because I think there's a lot of strategies being floated out there, and they're more likely looking for individual countries' reactions, whether it be the newspapers, whether it be the politicians, whether it be the populace. They're looking for people's reactions to seeing what they're going to buy. They're testing the water with different policy suggestions. Mm-hmm. And if it's going to be corporate bonds, well, maybe that's what it is. But how do you define which one you're going to buy and which one you're not going to buy?
Well, and that's a great point. I mean, it gets to the kind of the question of, if they were going to buy sovereign bonds, which country would they buy? Because essentially you're doing, you know, you're picking national champions, right?
Yeah.
On, you know, which bonds are you going to buy? Are you going to buy Siemens bonds, right, from Germany? Or are you going to buy Fiat bonds? You know, and these are the debates that could go on. But to me, it makes sense, and maybe I'm off base on this, but if the mechanism to create liquidity or monetary liquidity in Europe is broken, meaning banks aren't lending, then you need to go to and provide money to the source of people that need it, which is going around them to directly to the corporations.
That may be a way. But then again, you come up to a situation. First off, you have to choose not only which company, but which country. You're adding an extra layer of problems and politics in there. And as soon as you mention a country, the politicians get involved, and you're not going to have a financial decision. You're going to have a political decision. And that may not necessarily be the best one for everybody at that time.
No doubt. No doubt. All right. Well, just one more question before I let you go. How far do you think the euro is going to go on the downside? What are your targets?
Looking at it, I would not be surprised if we go sub 120 down to maybe 118, 119 area, something like that. The 2010 low was just around about 118 and three quarters. 2012 was just over 120.50. Somewhere between that area would be a suitable resting place, shall we say.
Yeah, and you know, that would match your call for the yen too, right? In currency land, we're always dealing with these strange numbers of inversions and things like that. And 118 on the yen and 118 on the euro, that seems to make sense to me.
Why not? There's plenty of opportunities when that sort of synchronicity happens. But I've got a funny feeling they're not going to happen together if they do.
Okay. All right, Eddie Tofbeck from ADM in London, thanks for joining us today.
It's been a pleasure.
All right, let's take a break, and I'll give you my final thoughts next. This is Engage.
The business community's first choice in Internet Talk Radio, Voice America Business Network.
How is your plan going? Could you use a little help on your path to success? Why not step up and play big? Join host Chris Ruisi for a show that will help you identify the possibilities that await you. Too many people succumb to just being average when they could be exceeding average without too much more effort. It's time for you to become exceptional. Raise the bar to your success. Basically, it's time for you to step up and play big. Join Chris Ruisi every Wednesday at noon Eastern Time, 9 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Business Channel.
Are you an entrepreneur that wants to achieve more? Not just in it for profit, but to do work you find meaningful, that adds more value to more people in more ways? Listen for Be More, Achieve More, Inspiration for the Entrepreneurial Mind. With host Chris Cooper, you'll hear from successful achievers from around the world with the passion and experience to offer invaluable guidance. These people are making a difference and will help give you the motivation and insight to achieve more. Be More, Achieve More can be heard live Fridays at 8 a.m. U.S. Pacific Time on the Voice America Business Channel.
Follow us on Twitter at VoiceAmericaTRN. Get the lowdown on guests, new shows, and your favorites. That's VoiceAmericaTRN.